Hello, everyone, and welcome to Celebrating Cinema, a podcast for the love of cinema. I'm here today with our producer, Elliot Bloom.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. We are so back after a little summer break, and today we're going to be talking about some new releases, including probably the most hyped horror movie of the year, Weapons, and Eva Victor's upcoming debut, Sorry Baby. Before we begin, I'd love to share some cool things that are going on in the next couple of weeks here at Lab 111 in Amsterdam. So Akira Kurosawa's Ron is back on the big screen for its 40th anniversary. Congratulations. As well as Barry Lyndon for its 50th anniversary. And I swear to the Lord, if you have not seen this on the big screen, now's your chance. On the 12th of September, get your tickets. We have a Mamma Mia sing-along. I can't stand that movie, but I bet it's really fun because I was at the Stop Making Sense dance-along recently. And I thought, this is all I want to do in this life. I just want to be in a cinema and sing and dance. Much more going on, of course. So check out lab111.nl to see the full program. But before we get into the new releases, Elliot, what have you been watching?
I'm ashamed to admit this, but I watched Happy Gilmore 2.
Hey.
No, but twice.
Twice?
In 24 okay. hours.
I was like, there's no shame in the game. And then I was like, wait, what is actually wrong with you? What's going on?
I was watching it with friends. I had no choice in this. And one of them didn't watch all of it the first time, so we watched it the second time, and it was just as bad the second time.
Tell me about Happy Gilmore 2, because I haven't seen it yet.
Adam Sandler, he's lost his wife. He's trying to make some money to send his daughter back to dance school, and so he's trying to get back into golf because he was a former golfer. Mm-hmm. Played, as I come to understand, with like an ice hockey style way of playing golf. I don't know what that means. And then, yeah, he gets invited to play in this golf competition and later ends up in a way to save golf from these big corporate takeover of trying to destroy the essence of what golf really is.
And we all know what the essence of golf really is.
Yeah.
Which...
but it's just so cheesy, but not in a good way.
Huh.
And it's like...
Were you a fan of Happy Gilmore 1?
I haven't watched it. So,
wow, so twice on the two.
Yeah, twice on the two.
None on the one.
And that
okay.
was painful. Have you seen Happy Gilmore, the original?
Yeah, I saw it ages and ages and ages ago. And then I've been, you know, really holding myself back from watching Happy Gilmore. I really want to.
Really?
No. But then I was like, okay, you know, does it all make sense if you haven't seen Happy Gilmore 1 in about, whatever, 20 years?
Oh, it does.
I'm sure it does.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know why I'm stopping myself from living, you know, my truth and watching.
It's just nostalgia overload. Like, they bring all the old characters back in some way, and then they do flashbacks to the first one, which I'm not a fan of Adam Sandler when he does comedy.
The flashback thing is a thing. Like, I recently watched, this is not my one that I wanted to talk about, but I recently watched the latest Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
And there they do that too, because of course they have like seven or like six movies to look back on. And then every 5 minutes, it's like, remember when this one thing happened in like the first movie or the third movie? Yeah. And they just do these like really cheesy flashbacks.
So you're
flashbacks.
Just basically rewatching all the other
yes,
Mission Impossible.
That's why it's 1,000 hours long.
What is the film you want to talk about that you've watched recently?
I have two a little bit. One kind of links into the nostalgia that you're talking about, Naked Gun.
Is it good? I've been wanting to see it.
I really liked it.
It's with Liam Neeson, right?
It's with Liam Neeson and Pamela Anderson. It's really hard because like Leslie Nielsen, Liam Neeson, they're such similar names. And the other day I recorded a video about it and I just noticed when I was editing the video that I kept like changing up the names.
And Leslie is the one from the original.
Yes.
Yes.
Leslie Nielsen, Liam Neeson. It's so hard. Why do you do this to people with...
It's almost as if they were made to play the one after
it's
each
probably
other.
In like whatever the boardroom was where they decided, it's like, who could we get to replace Leslie Nielsen, Liam Neeson? He did a great job. I think Liam Neeson is an incredible straight man. Like, he never plays for the joke, but the jokes are so ridiculous that I think that's just the fun of any... of the Naked Gun movies is that you need a very stern and serious actor
yeah.
to say the most ridiculous shit you've ever heard in your life.
Yeah.
I think it's good to know that it was directed by Akiva Schaffer, who's one of the boys from The Lonely Island.
Mm.
So
that's a good pick.
That is great. And he's like very passionate about it. You can really tell that he loves the original movies. It's incredibly hard to rate because it's just fucking dumb the whole time. It's just really dumb. But I always try to rate something for what its intention is and what it's trying to do. And it's trying to be a Naked Gun movie. It's trying to make you chuckle. And it definitely succeeds in that. So I had a great time with that. One thing I was thinking about is that we don't really get a lot of comedies in movie theaters anymore. I feel like it's doing pretty well because I went on like a Friday morning and like 10 a.m. or something. Room was pretty
amazing.
Not packed, but there are more people there than usually are at a 10 a.m. screening. It's just fun to sit in a movie theater and just like laugh with people and see what other people respond to. And the things is like, I let out a really, really big laugh and then nobody else laughed. And it's like, wait, that's just really fun. And I feel like I've missed that after like growing up with things like Anchorman. And,
So there's that was definitely a space for that.
Delightful. In a similar, not so similar vein, Barry Lyndon, I saw here at Lab.
For the first time?
For the first time, because it was one of those gaps, you know, that I had where I was like waiting for it to be on the big screen so I could really do it justice. Incredible. The whole, like, every frame of painting, it's so true for this movie. But also, the thing that I didn't know about this is that it's funny as hell.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it.
It's incredible. Like, I thought, okay, let's strap in. This is going to be 3.5 motherfucking hours. This is going to be tough, but it's like, not at all. Time flies by. There's an intermission so you can get a little drinksicle and a snacksicle and you're going to be fine. And it's just really funny as well.
What's it about?
It's about a guy who basically gets banished from his town after some shit goes down. And he's quite well to do, but he loses everything. And then he just goes on 1,000 side quests and ends up being Lord Barry Lyndon through like a chain of events. And then
we love side quests.
Oh, we love a side quest. It's so fun. I love this movie. If you're worried about the 3.5 hour runtime, please don't. Because you know me, I'm bad with that kind of shit. But like, I had a great time. I would see it again.
Well, I'm going to check that out. Speaking about films and intentions, should we try and make sense of Weapons?
Okay, Weapons is the new movie by director Zach Cregger, who kind of shook up the horror scene in 2022 with Barbarian. This movie is about how a bunch of kids in a town on one night all got out of their beds at 2:17 in the morning and ran outside into the darkness. Nobody knows where, nobody knows why. And also, strange detail is all these kids were in Julia Garner's class. And only one kid didn't disappear. He showed up for class. And this, of course, leads to the whole town grieving and being super on edge and pointing fingers at each other. And here's a clip.
Jesus! What? Who's there? Hello?
Elliot. How are you feeling?
I've had time now to decompress.
Mm-hmm.
It does go absolutely crazy at the end.
Fun detail, Elliot and I saw it together, so it's very fun always seeing horror movies together because you can really like see each other's responses in the moment.
Yeah, you can expose me. I close my eyes a lot of the time.
Oh, yeah.
I'm terrible.
And then
with
gore. I pretended to look at you closing your eyes and being like, what a fucking wuss, just so that I didn't have to look at the screen. So that's me exposed.
You're welcome. Yeah, I hate gore. I'm not a horror guy. I really struggle with it just because of the bloody nature of it. And this is where I think I want to get into Weapons, is I also don't like where it's horror for the sake of shock. And that there's not like, I can never quite tell if a horror is supposed to be funny because, oh, it's so silly, this could never happen. Or if it's taking itself seriously. And I feel with Weapons, it's somewhere in between the two, which is why I came out unsure of what to make of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the thing that lost me a bit is that it focuses on six characters.
Yeah.
And so it has like a character arc where you follow each character six times.
Yeah. So basically it's kind of like the Magnolia storytelling structure where it's like you start with a chapter and it's like, what's her name? Miss this. And then you go da, 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 and you live out the story and then it goes next person.
Yeah.
Kind
of also David Fincher-esque of like piecing the puzzle together. And the problem with that for me is already by the second character, you kind of worked out what's happened. And you don't know, obviously you don't know exactly to what extent, but you know where all the details are pointing towards that you just feel like,
like it's definitely going to be at that house.
Yeah, exactly.
But what, you know, like that's what I, so just kind of like, I didn't know what to make of it and I do really like it.
Yeah.
What I really liked about that is that I always purposefully, when I know that I want to see a movie, it's like, oh, Zach Cracker made a new movie. I'm sad. I already bought the ticket and the people at the theater are already asking me to leave. That's a joke that I stole. I don't want to watch a trailer. I don't want to read about it because I know that I want to go. So I didn't know that that was going to be the storytelling structure. So that's really interesting to me because like, I was like, wow, like it really seems like she's finding out where this shit is going down really quickly. And boy, we're only 30 minutes into the movie. Yeah. And it's like, boom, next. And I was like, ooh, interesting, fun. So that really surprised me and was exciting. What I really like about what you said is that you don't really know what to make of it, whether it's trying to be funny or whether it isn't. The funny thing about Zach Cregger, very similarly to Jordan Peele, is they both come from a comedy background.
Yeah.
So Jordan Peele, of course, as we know, has an improv background. He was part of Boom Chicago here in Amsterdam. Then he did, of course, Mad TV, Key and Peele. And he makes this type of horror movie where it's incredibly well made, but you can also feel kind of the breath of relief because it's allowed to be funny. And there's things that are obviously very funny. And Zach Cregger also comes from comedy. He was in a comedy troupe called The Whitest Kids You Know. And then he did a bunch of sitcoms and stuff. And then he started making horror. And I really like that as a jumping off point for people making horror, because what I don't like in horror is the incredibly frowny, self-serious things. Like, what are good examples of that? I haven't seen it yet, but you have that one now, Bring Her Back, which I look at the poster and I'm like, oh God, this is going to be so dark and it's going to be, it's going to be so pressing and that I already, kind of don't want to go see it. And what I like about this is very similar to Barbarian, the sense of humor that it has, because, and I think this has parallels with the next movie we're going to be talking about. I think that's also what life is like, you know, something really tragic happens, but also, you know, there will still be things that you laugh about. And also this just gets ridiculous to such an extent that, yeah, you're allowed to laugh for sure. Like he purposely made it so ridiculous, kind of similar to the mild spoiler ending of 28 Years Later, where people didn't really know to make of it. But it's like, it's not that deep. It's you're allowed to laugh.
True. But I think that was my issue of that it's, and again, maybe again, it's intentional of he's building it up to perhaps be more layered or have some kind of meaning that he's trying to point towards. But in the end, like you say, it's not that deep.
Yeah.
Like what I liked is he plays on the classic like horror cliches and makes them funny. So like the clown is a recurring motif. And then like the one scene where one of them, they just can't kill this, one of the people that's attacking them. But I think the difference between Jordan Peele's horror films and Zach Cregger, Barbarian, is I know exactly what Jordan Peele is doing and like I know his intention and I think it's brilliant and he's trying to clearly communicate something through using the horror genre, and then the, like you say, the comedic elements are a way to breathe throughout it or just to like ground you, whereas this, it just felt like taking you one way, very intense, and then completely ripping the seatbelt off and taking you in another direction and then just, I don't know, I left a bit like unsatisfied by it all.
You make a really good point. I really think that that is the difference between Jordan Peele having these, like, it's always very much like commentary on a thing that's going on in society. And this, I can't really, if he's trying to do that, I can't really find that in there. Kind of, have you seen Barbarian?
No.
What I really like about Barbarian is it, this, the purpose that it serves is that you think it's going one way. He does that thing, seatbelt off. He just like takes you in another direction. Yeah. And it's just a really fun ride.
Yeah.
I think my Letterboxd review was something like, you know, you'll be tempted to ask, but why? And the answer is probably going to be because that's fucking insane.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I choose to just shrug and go, okay, sick, Kang, let's fucking go. Yeah.
But then for me, that's where it falls into the pit or pitfall of other horror films, of where it's, although I didn't feel it here so much, but it's just shocking for the sake of shocking rather than like something else. And I like it when it's a bit more clear cut. If it's one, commit to it. But I can understand why people will like this film, because it does play with expectation. It does allude to a lot of things. And I think sort of the character performances are also brilliant, like Josh Brolin as well. Yeah.
Can we just?
He's also quite like inadvertently funny throughout the film in a good way.
He does one incredible what the fuck that I like wrote down on my notepad. It's like, that is probably the best what the fuck I've ever heard in film.
Yeah.
Incredible stuff.
I love it when he goes to another house to ask to see some CCTV footage. That's all I'll say. And he asked the wife, and the wife is like, no, I'm not going to show you. And then he waits for the husband. And it just cuts to him and the husband watching it, and the wife watching
standing
it.
Standing in the background, like...
yeah, so pissed off.
Very funny. It was quite a packed journalist screening for... usually you're sitting there with, like, five other people, but it was quite packed, and it was really fun hearing and seeing the reactions in real time. And I think that's why horror movies are still one of the best kind of seen things in cinema, because, you know, it's just really fun to all sit together and react and and laugh, and, you know, laugh at you because you're scared. And yeah, so I often get the question whether something was scary. Yes, there are a lot of jump scares there, and it's very graphically gory. You know, there's a lot of like open skulls, so if you're not a fan of that, you know, you're allowed to close your eyes.
But I also read that apparently Jordan Peele sort of fired his production team for dropping the ball and not winning the bidding war on this film because it was highly sought after.
That's what I heard.
But I think it also speaks to the fact, which we're going to talk about in the next episode, how there's sort of a lack of original IP in cinema, or at least in like the top 15 grossing films in the last few years. And I think this is perhaps one film along with Sinners this year that I can imagine breaking into that top 15, top 10.
I hope so. At least, because it's original IP, I would love for people to go see this and have some fun with it. I was talking to a friend earlier who's saying that it disappointed him because there was so much hype around it and what the trailer kind of did.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I would honestly, if that's something that bothers you, I would advise you to go in as blindly as possible, even though you've been listening to us chat about this now for 10 minutes. But I never feel like that's a fair assessment of a movie to go like, well, the trailer was different than the movie because the filmmaker would have had nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
Okay, we move on to Sorry Baby, a debut by Eva Victor, who, incidentally, I've been following on Instagram since the absolute beginning of time, so it's really fun to see her do a movie. She wrote, directed, and starred in this tragicomedy about coming to terms with living through something traumatic, but everyone else's lives just seem to go on while you feel stuck, and here's a clip.
I can feel in my body that it was really bad. But there's a reason, even if I can't see it, that I'm alive. I got a cat.
Whatever you need.
So what I want to say up front is none of the trailers or synopses explicitly mention what the thing is that happened to Agnes. It's implied, and you do find out pretty quickly about 30 minutes into the movie, 20 minutes into the movie. It's quite hard to talk about this movie in depth without mentioning what the thing is. So if you do want to go in completely blind, maybe go see the movie first and then come back to this discussion. What did you think of this movie, Elliot?
I'm going to throw this around immediately and ask you, not because I don't want to say, but I think better to hear from you first before I say what I think.
Totally. So I think what's important to know, now that we're going to be talking about the thing, she's a student, she excels, and there's this teacher who thinks she's excellent, and she and her friend are joking around, oh my god, you should sleep with him. He invites her over to his house, and then sexual assault happens. What I think is really beautiful is the way that it deals with the aftermath of sexual assault. I think as a woman, unfortunately, most women have been in some form of sexual assault, and it's just the expression of the internal conflict of, wow, this thing happened, but is it the thing or is it not that deep? Or do I, he definitely did a really bad thing, but do I want him to go to jail over that? Or just the nuance of that was incredible to see play out. the way that you sometimes make light of it with humor, the way that you might not tell people about it, the way that you feel disillusioned, you're grieving, but also you're doubting yourself. If, God, I thought it was insane. I think you might have seen me cry a little during it.
Yeah.
You're itching. Yeah, it really hit me. It really did.
I read a really beautiful Letterboxd comment that said this film is really going to help at least someone that's gone through this. And I think that's such an achievement or feat for a film to do. And I think just from your reaction, you can see that it will.
Yeah.
I think it's very nuanced. And I think that's the brilliant part about it. That, like, for instance, the incident of sexual assault, the drama is completely stripped away. You don't see it. The perpetrator of the crime, you hardly see in the film. He probably appears maybe two or three scenes, and the rest is all about Agnes. And there's something, it feels slow at times, or like you're just sitting and watching something, but that's really the point, that you see.
Yeah, it really lets you sit with it.
Yeah, and that's the whole point of someone who, in a way, not that she can't move on, but for whatever reason, she hasn't reached that point of being able to come to terms fully with what she's suffered through or that's happened to her, and how life around her continues to move on, and how also her relationship with Liddy, which is played by Naomi Aki. I thought that's a really...
She's amazing.
Yeah. I thought it's a really beautiful friendship, because it's not like this classic kind of sister solidarity, but something deeper where they just trust each other so implicitly that they will, like, there's a moment where Agnes is contemplating burning his office, and immediately Liddy goes, I will do it for you.
Yeah, let's fucking
like,
go. Yeah.
Like, there's no like trying to say you're being irrational or anything. And I think that was really beautiful. And the fact that she immediately is able to describe what happened to her to her friend, I think was also very powerful, because I think often it's something that people who have gone through this feel like they can only carry to themselves. And then also like the Agnes's interaction with institutions, of her trying to come to terms with what happened or trying to seek justice, is very funny.
It is really funny. There's a scene where she's called for jury duty, and they ask her, is there anything that would prevent you from being, is there anything that would prevent you from being
biased or unbiased
in this trial? And she's kind of like, oh, I don't know. And she kind of like has to fill out this form, and she starts making jokes on the form and just to kind of avoid. And then she just goes like, well, I've never really said it out loud before. Yeah. And I think that's really beautiful, the way that they put this in this thing where you're kind of relieved that you get to leave this institution, but also you have this like heavy thing that you just like for the first time in your life said out loud. Or like, she didn't even have to say it out loud. The woman just looked at her and was like, oh, I realize what's going on here. You're dismissed.
Yeah.
It's that like really, it's really, I've never cried talking about a movie before.
Mm.
What I also thought was really funny is that when we were in the press screening, there were really like only women there. There was like one other guy apart from you, which I think is a bummer, because I really feel like everyone should see this movie. I think it's very important for women to see this. I think maybe it's even more important for men to see this movie.
Yeah, I was saying to you, the crowd that was there for Weapons was very different. None of them turned up to watch.
Yeah, because like usually at press screenings, you'll see kind of like the same faces. And, you know, it was funny because like we did 2 days in a row, we did Weapons. And then the next day we did Sorry Baby. And it was just like the first screening was almost all men. The second screening was almost all women. Yeah. And hey, look at us. We showed up for both.
The other funny moment was when she's speaking to the university and then they send two women to...
Oh my God. Yeah, but I thought that, because that moment's also in the trailer. And I thought that got a funny reaction in the room where people kind of like Scott, like they kind of laughed at it. And I also laughed at it because the delivery is so funny. She sits there, she reports to the university what happened, and then these two ladies who are clearly comically cast just go, we understand, we're women. And the delivery of that is so funny that you laugh, but the underlying thing is exactly what I just said. We understand, we're women. Mm-hmm. Everyone, not everyone, but like almost everyone has gone through a situation that has something to do with sexual assault.
Yeah,
them saying we're women and it getting a laugh is so layered and funny, but there's this deeper meaning behind it. Yeah. I think she's this was such an insane debut for someone who like wrote, directed, and starred in it that I can't wait to see what she does next.
Because she also comes from a comedy background.
Mm-hmm.
So it was nice to see how she mixes sort of the deadpan comedic elements as a way to breathe, or as like a sigh of relief of, oh, even like people who are living through this can't take it too seriously, otherwise it's going to consume you, or you're not going to be able to live at all. And I found that very powerful. But what I would say is, when I watched the trailer, my expectation was to like be almost emotionally devastated by the film. And mm-hmm. I think it does do that, but I think it also shows that the fact, as a man, and not having gone through something like sexual assault, I can also never really experience it.
Yeah.
So I wasn't necessarily as emotionally devastated as you might have been watching it, but I still felt it, or there was an understanding of what she was going through, but in a different way of seeing her go through the normality or the mundanity of day-to-day life.
Yeah, and it's funny because like I had a little, which is always so awkward when you're in a press screening with other journalists and something like hits you emotionally. So I kind of like, you know, I kind of stifled it. And then on the way home, I was like, oh boy, ooh, here we go. And now again, talking to you about it. But what I really liked about the moments of humor is that they made me emotional as well. It's like going to the doctor's office, feeling that a doctor's being kind of uncareful. So you use humor as a defense mechanism in those situations. And it was all so, it really do be like that sometimes, you know, everything about it was just so recognizable to me as a woman who's kind of the same age as her. And what I also really liked is that it portrayed her trying to like take the power back sexually as well. Like trying to, what is that like after you go through sexual assault to kind of like re-enter intimacy?
Yeah.
I thought that was really beautifully done. I think this was a full-on fucking home run.
Yeah. And again, nuance the sex scenes, just because like you would, perhaps the cliche example of someone being too traumatized to even be intimate with someone, but yet she is, but not able to enjoy it, and then reaches a point, but all under on her terms.
Yeah.
And then the only other thing I want to say is the brief appearance from John Carroll Lynch, I think sort of stole the show.
Wow.
Not from him, but that moment that they shared together of her going through a panic attack, and then sort of her struggling to have met anybody to really like be nice to her outside of her closest friend.
Mm-hmm.
And then him coming in somewhat annoyed, but then immediately recognizing her pain for whatever reason and finding a way to communicate with her.
That was beautiful.
Yeah.
And also the fact that sometimes it's like easier to talk to a stranger.
Yeah.
You know, I thought, I don't know. I thought it was lovely. Also, one other completely different thing that I wrote down, but that I did note, is like most of it is set in winter, and it really like made me long for like sitting on the beach on a crisp winter day with my best friend eating a sandwich in a big jacket. I can't wait. It's really warm right now.
The cinematography is also amazing because they capture, and so it's sort of set in the rural lands of America, and they use the landscape again to reflect sort of the barrenness or the loneliness that she feels, and then contrasted when she's inside indoor spaces often can feel claustrophobic or closed, which I really loved. I think it's a home run. It was produced by Barry Jenkins, which again shows you how well thought of this script was when it came to him, and I can't wait to see what she does next.
I thought it was beautiful. It's playing later this month. We're just talking about it in this episode, so you have plenty of time to get your tickets. Both of these movies will be screening at Lab 111, so if you want to get your tickets, check out the website, and while you're there, also check out all the other cool stuff we have going on here. We're back to weekly episodes starting now, so I hope to catch you on the next one. This was a Lab 111 production, edited and produced by Elliot Bloom, with music from Hugo Emmertzall and artwork from Studio FFF.